So, assuming that I can stay up for the next hour, this is what we're going to be doing. We'll be finishing the topic of whether and how you can subvert Onah. Last time, we began with the key discussion, Nun Aleph from the base, waiving Onah, the Machlokas Rav and Shmuel. Rav saying that you can't waive your right to claim Onah. Shmuel says you absolutely can. We tried to trace it to the Machlokas Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, but then said no. Each side would claim victory and say that both Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda was on their side. We made distinctions between two kinds of waivers. One was the concern of, did you say, I am not going to claim Onah, versus saying, there is no Onah, and that's the whole Masna Mashkas of Torah discussion that we're not having. And the other was between Stam and Mefarish, that we distinguish between where you just say, there is Onah, or, well, let me not bias it in that way. We distinguish between Stam and Mefarish, saying that Mefarish would be a good tonight potentially. Mefarish may mean saying there is Onah, and that's sufficient. The seller says, yes, I am overcharging you. Buyer says, yes, I am underpaying you. Or Rambam's view, that you're more explicit in Mefarish, and you say, this is the amount by which I am committing Onah. And the other side says, I'm good with that. And then we have the tangent with Noseh v'Nosin Ba'amana, which comes up later on as well. So we then went into the question of why Mechila does not work. And we presented what you could more or less call three different ideas, although they spell out as four. They really are three. You have it, Pesach?
No.
You looked in Wednesday?
It was Wednesday.
So the first explanation for why Mechila doesn't work is the buyer, or whoever's the victim, but I'm going to assume buyer because it's easier than presenting both sides the whole way through. The buyer thought there was no Onah. And therefore, he only agreed to this in order to sound good. We're all friends and I'm Mochel and don't worry about it. But he doesn't really think, that was Patume Mili. He doesn't really think that there's an Onah issue. And then the second approach was that Mechila doesn't work. Mechila is inherently invalid if you don't know what it is that you are forgiving. Right? We did have this other view along the way, but I'm just going to stick with those two. And then the third view was Ramban, as brought in the Sefer HaTrumos, to say that we reject Mechila for Onah specifically because of Gzeras HaKasu, because what the Torah says, in this case of Onah, you have the rights to claim it back. That tells me that there's no such thing as Mechila as forgiveness, because if there were Mechila, that's what goes on in standard commerce all the time. Everybody knows the seller is trying to get a deal for himself, the buyer is trying to get a deal for himself. In normal situations, we each forgive it of the other, and the fact that the Torah legislates a law of Onah says there's no such thing as Mechila in this regard. We don't accept the forgiveness that goes on. Those are the three different approaches. We concluded with the question of balabayis, and if Stam Mechila does not work, then why does the Gemara say that when you buy from a balabayis, you can't claim Onah? Right? There was no specification of Onah. There was no Mefarish. And we gave two answers. The Machane Ephraim's answer, which again I still find circular, he says that the halacha eliminates the ability to claim Onah from the balabayis. Therefore, you are Mochel the Onah from the balabayis. The problem, of course, being that that's what generates the halacha saying that you can't claim Onah from a balabayis. I'm still stuck. Adam understands it. I don't. The Chiddush Rabbeinu Meir Simcha, on the other hand, simply says, because everybody knows the balabayis overcharges, and therefore the balabayis is actually a mefarish case. It's not a stam case. Fine. If you're looking at the source sheet, we're up to Yud Zayin in the sources, and what we're going to do now is first talk about one last overarching topic of Mechila, which is, if Mechila doesn't work for Onah, maybe Mechila doesn't work ever, if you're ignorant. We'll talk about it in the context of Mumin, where there's a defect in the purchase, and then we'll talk about it in terms of general transactions, and then we're going to go into, so how can you actually avoid claims of Onah? So, in terms of the question of Mechila beyond the laws of Onah, ignorant Mechila, or ignorant anything in a transaction beyond Onah, because it's not just Mechila, it's Shivud, when you bind yourself to something, you obligate yourself to something, Hakna, when you give something, you assign something to someone, but not knowing what you're doing. So it comes up in the halacha of Mumin, in the halacha of defects in a purchase. And if you take a look at Yud Zayin, you see this Rambam, which we bring up multiple times in the course of this year, in Hilchos Mechira Perak Tezvah Halacha Vav. When you purchase something without specifying anything about the item that you're purchasing, the assumption is you're getting something that is whole, that is without defect. If the seller says, I am selling it to you on condition that you can't come back to me for a blemish, that's no good. That waiver does not have any strength to it whatsoever, and the buyer is still able to say, I want my money back. Unless he actually says, this is the blemish, and the buyer says, okay. And this is the lokeach speaking, that word in the brackets I added in. If the buyer specifies, I will forgive up to X amount, that's okay then.
So then it's like a waiver that encapsulates without disclosure.
Correct. That's a knowledgeable waiver. And the Rambam concludes the line with the part that I put in bold. Shamochel tzarech leida hadavar sheyimchol lo bo v'yifareisho. So, come on, mefaresh bahonaya. Because the forgiver has to know that which he is forgiving and specify it just like regarding onah. So the Rambam explicitly links mum with onah. How does he know that the laws, this law of Stam and Mefarish is discussed in Nun Aleph and Mabez regarding Onah? Where did he get the idea that that should apply to Mum also?
Well, yeah, with the Mabez, which is Daf Yomi, just did it.
But again, that's Onah. That's the question of how to define what's going on with Matbea is a fun thing, but it's an honor.
He calls a moment right. The test of his own.
So the Magid Mishnah gives you a simple answer. Take a look at Yudches. He says, Lo yadati zemavur. He says, I don't know any explicit source for this comparison to Onah. Elami Dinyon Zel Onah Lamad Cain. He's saying he's learning this law from the comparison to Onah. I don't know where you get the idea that Mefaresh works for Mum. Stam does not work for Mum. But I guess it's from this comparison to Onah. Umikal v'chomer Sha'arei Hamum La'olam Choser. He says, look, the power of the victim in a mum case is greater than the power of the victim in an onah case. In a mum case, he's able to retract forever.
It could be mekachos.
It can be mekachos, correct. But he's in the narrow parameter of mum, one subset of mekachos. He makes the statement that you're able to go back anytime you want. Now, that's not really true. If you used it, then there's a separate discussion, but whatever. You're able to go back to him 10 years later and say, you know, it's still in the box. I never used it, and I noticed that there's a defect about it. I would like to get a refund. So if the buyer has more power in mum than he does in onah, and yet the rule regarding Onah is that he's able to be mochel, certainly in Mum, he's allowed to be he's allowed to claim it in a Stam case and not in a Mefarish case. Certainly we're going to say so when we're dealing with Mum. Alternatively, though, this really could be part of a greater worldview that never accepts Mechila where you don't know. The only question is, then why did the Rambam need to say Onah? But it could be this is part of a greater worldview. So that's regarding Mumin in the view of the Rambam. The Tur agrees with the Rambam regarding Onah, but he doesn't agree with the Rambam when it comes to Mum. If you take a look at Yud Tes, he quotes you the Rambam. Etc. Right? Ad kan. He quotes the Rambam regarding Mum, and he says, that's like what the Rambam wrote, that in general you are not able to assign property to somebody if it is infinite. If it has no determination. This goes back to what I said last week about the confusion between toes and Ein Lo Kitzvah. You know, sometimes we'll talk about it being, I don't know the thing, because I am ignorant. And sometimes we'll talk about where I don't know it because it is unknowable. That's the Ein Lo Kitzvah discussion. But what he does is he quotes the Rambam, and he says, this is part of the Rambam's overarching philosophy. You don't assign things to people without knowledge of exactly what it is that you are assigning. And then the Tur writes, Vani kasavti lamala shaladas adoni avi arash zal yochol haknoso v'adin shiyochol limchol. However, my dad said, right? When your dad is the Rosh, he says, my father said that you are able to be machna devar she'en lo kitzpah, and you're able to be mochla devar she'en lo kitzpah. So when he presents in Reish Lamed Beis the laws of mum, the Torah seems to distinguish between mum and onah. He does not seem to accept this equation of them. So the question is, why does he distinguish? And the general assumption is that yes, he's agreeing with the Rosh. By quoting it in this way, he actually is siding with his father. So the Taz says that the Torah actually doesn't accept the Rambam regarding Onah. The Rambam, remember, said that in order to be Mochel Onah, you have to specify the amount. He says the Torah does not accept this. The Taz I brought you in Chaf, he says, after the phrase Lashbich Daiti, Perish, Kashem Shabara Shashaba Yosem Mizuz Kachbara Mekach Blitaos Legamri. Umashma mizeh kol sheyodeya sheyesh al kolponim ona ela shelo yada shiuro. If he knows there is ona, he just doesn't know what the shear is. Mehani masha amar sheinu shava elazuz. You know what? I'm going to go do it. I'm going to skip to the middle part, because the middle part is the part that's directly germane for us. Kamo shekasav rabbeinu atur reish lamed beis zayin gabe mumin ubahi lo kanalan kavase of the Rambam. I'm going to skip it entirely rather than go through it. No, because I realize that we don't need to get tangled. The point that the Taz tries to make is that the Torah doesn't require specification of an amount regarding Onah, because the Torah believes that there is such a thing as Mechila for a non-Katsuf. That's the point that you're supposed to get out of this, as opposed to total ignorance of whether there is Onah or total ignorance of whether there is a Mum. Once you know that there is something, it's always going to be okay down the line. In other words, the Torah is consistent. He applies the same rule for Onah that he does for Mum. Just like for Mum, he says it's enough that you know there is a Mum. Regarding Onah, he believes it's enough that there is Onah. He doesn't require the Rambam's level of specifications. That's one approach. The Sma offers another approach. The Sma in Reish Lamed Beis Tezai, and I did not bring it here, says that regarding Onah, the buyer assumes that his own analysis is going to be correct and he'll avoid Onah. Therefore, he doesn't actually forgive it. In other words, I may say to you, I'm mochel Onah. What I'm really thinking is, once I get a good look at the item, I'm going to pay what's appropriate. And if it's not appropriate, I'm not going to pay it. And therefore, I don't need to worry about being mochel. So he's not really being mochel. Whereas when it comes to mum, argues the Sma, the buyer doesn't think he knows better. The buyer thinks there may be... he's going to look at the item.
He doesn't know about the moment. Why?
Correct. That's the point. The buyer doesn't make the assumption that he knows better. Therefore, the Torah regarding Onah is going to say your mechila wasn't real unless you knew the amount. Because you were basing yourself on your own analysis, you weren't really mochel. Whereas regarding the mum, you don't think that you know better. If you're expressing mechila, if you express mechila regarding mum, it's because you really trust the other guy. That's the distinction that the Sma makes in Reish Lamed Beis Tezayin. You follow? Yeah.
Is the assumption that according to the Torah in mum, you don't need to put a cap on the amount, or this is even within the example that the Rambam?
The Torah in mum, you do not need to put a cap on the amount. That's correct.
Just saying.
That's it. Whatever mum there is, mochel. That is correct.
That could be a form of Onah in itself, isn't it?
What do you mean? Yeah,
because it has a mum.
Yeah.
But what is its worth? So, I mean, I can only assess it after I've seen it, and then I come to a determination whether I've been cheated
right, so
or
what
not.
Right, so what the Gemara really does is it distinguishes between mum and Onah.
But is mum a subset of Onah?
No, it's being given its own. Are you planning on doing that in the next sugya? You don't know yet. That's the distinction that we draw between mum and Onah, which comes up also in the coin case, the defective coin. Onah means this is an item that is not defective; it just has a certain market value, which I may or may not be able to determine.
There is no gezeiras kasuf, thou shalt not sell something with a mum, but there is with respect to Onah.
I mean, there is.
Where?
I mean, Mosne Tzedek, Eifas Tzedek, Hin Tzedek, Yelachem.
No, but it's a mum, it's not a quantity.
Can you distinguish for me? I mean, this is going to go farther afield.
Okay.
I'm not going to go there. But thought question. Can you distinguish between where I sell you an apple and there's a bite out of it, but you can't see it, or where I sell you a gallon of, or liter, whatever, of milk, and it's not full? which one is a mum and which one is not a mum. I don't think it's so straightforward.
I guess I'm looking at mum in a different way.
Yeah. I had my own note on this, which I'm going to actually let me hold my own note. Let me go through in order. The Nesivos in Simon Samach is Siv Dalet. I brought it for you, I think, on the sheet. Yeah, in Chafalov, takes you back to the Ramban in Sefer Atrumos for the justification. He says the Torah rejects Mechila for Onah specifically. That's where the Torah says it. The Rambam extended it to Mum because he believes what Tommy believes. He believes that Onah applies when you sell a defective item at a normal price. That, he says, is Onah, so I shouldn't be so quick to dismiss the idea. But the Torah is going to disagree with that extension. That's exactly his. That's exactly his point. You can see it in his Sivos in Chafalov.
There seems to be. Well, I think maybe it's just restating it, but the whole topic seems to be okay. There are things, and those things have a value. If those things are complete and shalim, and therefore there's a more readily available market for that value, then you get into issues of, is the price correct?
Correct.
All right. If the price is correct for if it was shalim, but the object's not correct, so you have the mum case.
Correct.
Effectively, it's really just this relationship between the price and what the actual object is, whether it's defective or not. And therefore, they interplay mum into ona, because effectively, it's a mismatch between the price and the value of the object.
Right. Or to word it slightly differently, because I think you need to a little bit. It's a question of what is my lack of knowledge. Is it that I don't know what I am buying, or is it that I don't know what I am paying?
Or you don't know what it's worth.
I would look at it, you know, from that perspective.
Right.
But if you look at what the Nesivos wrote in Chafalov, he says Ayin Sma Reish Lamed Beis Tes Zayin Shadochak Atzmo Limsov Chiluk Bein Ona Alamum. To explain the Torah, the Ishtemitzei Divrei Ramban Shevi Balatrimosev Shar Samach Dalad and so on. Shekasav Atam is Elashona. Hasam Taima Rabba Ika De Bistam Ika Mechila. And this is, we've already seen this. Da Kol Derech Mekach Umemkar Kol Echad Yodeya Shechaver Amal Levitam In Koma Sheyuchol Alos. Rachman Amar Lo Davi Mechila Bechdei Sheyera Letagar and so on. He just, that's just the quote from the Sefer Trumos. But he says, "Ulefi zeh hachiluk pashut bein onah d'shayach ba'atam shekazav Ramban mishum dekol echad yodeya." Right? The logic in onah is because everybody knows, right? Mash ein kein b'mum d'bistam vada yodeya d'lekamum umishumachi batel. He says it's an entirely different thing when you're dealing with mum. With onah, as Ramban wrote, everybody knows that he's trying to get a better deal for himself. With mum, we don't assume that people are trying to sell you defective goods. That's not the assumption. The same assumption is there ain't no mum. The kevin shemafarish yesh bo mum. Once he says there's a mum, afil lo pirish lo eiz a mum ikal lemember demachil. Even without telling you what the mum is, you could already say that this fellow is Molcha. Yeah.
So it's interesting. He draws that distinction, because the reality is that along the same lines, you know, everyone's trying to better themselves, whether it's the mocher or the lokeach. The mocher, assuming he's not looking to have things for a mum and sell them for the market price, he's looking to have sholem to sell for the market price.
Yes.
He, like all people, inevitably ended up with some that had a mum, but
correct,
he doesn't want to suffer that.
Right.
So,
unless you're talking about a street vendor who goes out to buy defective things in order to be
clothes,
able to,
whatever. I mean, but Karagil, you know, he would be trying to sell you a sholem at a sholem price.
Correct.
But he may know that it has a mum. All right, but he's trying to. He doesn't want to suffer the loss of having to sell a mum at a mum.
Right.
So, I his distinction, I don't know, would not necessarily support that.
What do you mean?
Because he's saying that in the case of mum, that the mocher is not lav dafka trying to sell you that. That's not true, because the mocher may know he has one with him, but he's trying to pass it off like everything else.
But the assumption in normal commerce is that that's not what's going on.
Well, that it's certainly in the minority.
Yeah,
that's enough.
Otherwise, you're not going to go back.
He knows there's 5% that have mums, but he's not, you know, he's not prepared to go and figure out which one has the mum.
Correct.
And if you bring it up, then fine. But otherwise, it's caveat. Okay.
The last distinction between mum and onah is mentioned by the Pamonei Zahav, quoting the Rashba. So I brought you the Rashba, and the Rashba's statement is actually, did I not bring you the Rashba there?
Not here.
Oh, that's odd. Okay. The Rashba in Beis Reish Ayin Ches says that Mefarish is needed. Oh, I know why I didn't bring it, because it's implicit in his case, but it's not explicit in his case. The case that the Rashba brings, we talked about it last week. was the case where somebody gave Reuven gave Shimon money to lend on his behalf to charge interest. You know, he says, "You know, go out and be the managing partner. Here's the money. I'm giving you the capital. You go out and lend it on my behalf." And he did this without any documentation. He did this without any edim. And then he comes back to Shimon and says, "I want my money." And Shimon says, "I don't know what you're talking about. Whatever, there was any such thing. But if you like, I will give you a money as long as you agree to forgive any claim against me so that Hashem won't be angry at me. You have to give mechila shemayim." So the Rashba says that Mefarish is needed in order, this is a Parmenizah based on the Rashba, Mefarish is needed in order to gain Mechila of Shamayim in a case where you're violating an Isser like Onah. In other words, Mum is just fraudulent commerce. Onah is an offense against Shamayim. There's a Lo Sase, Lo Sonu. So maybe you need Mefarish because you're trying to satisfy God. The problem that I have with that goes back to what you said before, which is there's no Isser in selling a mum. There's no Gnevas Das problem. That doesn't bother us at all. I found that very odd. But that's what he said. Okay. But that's in terms of distinguishing between mum and onah. Even if you're not going to accept mum when it comes to will we equate the laws of mechila regarding mum with the laws of mechila regarding onah? The other, though, is the broader question, which is, in general, are you able to be mochel without having a specific amount, without having clear knowledge of what exactly is being nimchal in this discussion? So here we have the Rambam, and the Rambam says, you already know it because it was mentioned in Chav Beis, Chiev Atzmo B'davar She'eno Katzuv. If somebody obligates himself to pay an open-ended amount, Kigon Sha'amar Hareini Chayev Lizon Oscha Olachasos Chamei Shanim. He says, I'll feed you for the next 5 years. Right? I'm giving you 5 years of food. I'm giving you 5 years of clothing. Av Apisha Kanu Miyado Lo Nishtabed. Even if there's a kinyan, you're not actually bound by that. Shazuk mamatanahi, it's a gift. There's no such thing here because you don't know what you're giving. And so my mentors have ruled. So the Rambam says you can't do a kinyan for davar she'en lo kitzbah, for something that's open-ended. However, the Shulchan Aruch seems less clear, as noted by the Sman, Reish Lamed Beis Tezayin, as well as the Pamonei Zahav and Dayanim Yudalad. Because the Shulchan Aruch, in certain cases, disqualifies ignorant mechila, like regarding mum, but he accepts ignorant mechila in other cases. So for example, if you take a look on your sheet of Chav Gimel, if somebody obligates himself to pay an unfixed amount, like the 5-year commitment of food or clothing, or he didn't even give him a set number of years, he says the Rambam believes that that's not binding, but then he says, so there, no one agrees with the Rambam, and that be the law. So he writes, and it's not just in Siman Samach over there. He discussed it with regarding Arev at the end of Choshen Mishpah Kuf Lamed Aleph. The Shulchan Aruch seems to say that ignorant mechila will work in certain cases. So the question is, what's going on? So two answers. One answer is from the Sma, and the other answer from the Bach quoted in the Pamonei Zahav. So the Sma says that Sam normally works. The default is that Stam works. It's only Mum and Onah that stand out. They are unique. The need to be Mefarish regarding Mum is learned from Onah, and in Onah we require Mefarish. That's the statement that the Sma makes, which I brought you in Chav Dalet. He says ordinarily it's not so. If you take a look at Chavdali, he says, "V'kasha lefiza dibre machaber sosrin zedzeh dekan sasam upasak Rambam in mum." He followed the Rambam, needing you to be mefarish. Mashma despirule de'ena the mischayv lachaver b'davar shenu katzuv, indicating that you do not bind yourself to an infinite obligation. Whereas on the other hand, ubisof simin reish zayin simin samach chasam achaber shakolach bonim chilku a Rambam bazeh. He says everybody disagrees with the Rambam. Vehim simin samach, which we just brought in chaf gimel, the naktinim bazeh the loka Rambam. So which is it? So the answer is lachein yirali demay the pasuk amachaber kama Rambam lo mitam shu davar shenu katsuv lachud. The fact that he follows the Rambam regarding mum is not because it is an it is because he accepts mechila of an infinite thing. Elo mishum denelaf mikabachomer de ona. It's because he learns that from ona, like the Magid Mishnah says. Uba ona hatam di yochel omar savarti shein ba ona lashpiach daiti omer kein. It's because I believe that there was no ona. So that's a separate thing. That's a thing unto itself. He is convinced by the ona argument. He buys the comparison of Ona to, or the link from Ona to Mum, but he will not go any further with it. That's the explanation of the Sma. The Pamanei Zahav then asks on that, because the Rashba in that case of Mechila Shamayim seems to say that Stam does not work in Ona, and it doesn't work for Mechila in general, but his answer is that the Rashba's case was this Mechila Shamayim, you know, unique discussion. Fine. The other answer is the Pamonei Zahav quoting the Bach from Reish Zayin. He says Stam works where you accept fully, but you don't always accept fully. That's his other answer. Meaning, you are tole bedas atzmo when you depend on yourself to figure it out. You can be mochel, you can be mishabed. He said that's like the example of being an arev when you're a cosigner on a loan. So you don't know what may come back to you in the end, but you depend on yourself. However, once you're engaged in a sale, there's another party involved, and you're limited in what you're going to accept. And therefore, you are able to back out. That's what he says based on the Bach, and he says that's how our Shtari Mechila work. That's how we can write up our documents, and they'll work even though they're open ended when we forgive something. If the forgiveness doesn't involve somebody else, some other player, it's just me making a statement on my own, then it's really sufficient that I made the statement on my own, and I don't need further knowledge. You follow? You with me? Is this at all clear? Am I going too fast?
Those are two different questions.
Let's take a look in the Bach. Let's see his wording in Chafei. He says Venira Lili Yashiv. He says, I think that we could explain it this way. Yesh l'chalik, the tole b'das atzmo b'luchud, where you only depend on what you are thinking. That's it. Kigon shechiv atzmo l'chaveiro kafi ritzono. Such as where you said, I am going to give you 5 years of shoes. Right? The, oh, nasa arev l'chaveiro kafi ritzono, where you become a guarantor for his loan. Right? Hasam vadai mishtabed, then you do accept it. Afilu b'tabashinu katsu, even if it's an infinite amount. Right? No limitation has been prescribed.
You're assuming that...
Shekachu Ritzono, because that's what you wanted to do.
You're assuming you didn't qualify how much the loan is.
Correct. Or you did, but you didn't know how much of it was going to end up on your shoulders.
Yeah, but it's still...
That's not the answer.
Theoretically, you could just continue buying. I mean...
Yeah. Well, we'll come back to that, actually. Abo b'mocher l'chaveru amenas she'ia t'chozer alai b'mum. However, if you sell something on condition that you aren't going to come back to me when there's a mum, now, damachira tola b'das shneyem. There are two players involved. Hamocher ein daito limkor b'damem elu ela al tanai sh'lo chozer imo b'shum mum. So the seller only wants to sell at this price if the other guy's not going to come back to him for the mum. V'alokeach ein daito liknos ela b'mum kach v'kach. And the buyer, for his part, says, well, I'm only accepting certain mumen up to certain amounts. But not by big mumen. That's why you're able to back out until he specifies what the mum is. Because there you have in mind, you know, there's another player, and I want to know what cards he's holding. So that's a different story. And that's why I would distinguish and say, Mechila works if you're dealing with unilateral cases. Stam Mechila will work, but if you're dealing with another player, then I need you to be Mefarish. That's the distinction. They do not have to explain why the Shulchan Aruch in certain cases is okay with Stam Mechila, and in other cases is not. Mum, Ona are on one side, other cases are on the other side, and then you'd have to apply it to each new case that comes up to ask, well, is this Tolab Das Atzmo? Is this just me? Or is this something where there's Tolab Das Acherim? There are other players involved in the picture. Okay. So that brings us to the question of what is it that you can do to avoid Ona'a in our day. And you can see I gave you in Chavav the list of what we're going to go through. There are two adjustments you can make in the declaration of Mechila, meaning in the declaration itself of what you say, and then there are five adjustments you can make in terms of the mechanism, how Mechila is delivered. And each of those, obviously, is going to be subject to debate. So the first one is to say, as I wrote on the sheet, limchol ad shir x, meaning the limit case. Maybe it's better, and we could work this out, such that in every deal that I do, in every sale that I do, I say, you're mochel up to x percentage, or up to a dollar amount. And that will count as mechila, because it's not ein bo kitzvah. Right? What's the concept? Why should this work? Go back to our three different reasons to disqualify mechila. Either mechila doesn't work because you don't really think there's an issue, or mechila doesn't really work because because when you make mechila by mistake, it's automatically invalid, right? Either there's a lack of intent, or the law doesn't recognize it, or Ramban, there's this geres hakasav. The argument that says that mechila works if it's up to a particular limit, why would that? Which argument is that going with in terms of disqualifying mechila stam? Which of those three arguments to reject mechila is it combating? The first one, right? That you don't really mean to be mochel, right? That mechila is about lack of serious. Really, that mechila is disqualified because you're not really serious. Or the second one. This is not contending with Ramban. This does not seem to contend with Ramban, unless you're going to make the argument that up to a certain amount is normal commerce, and I'm not sure how you would play that game. But what they're saying is either that we reject mechila because of lack of seriousness, or because it's automatically no good because of toes, and if you give a limit, those don't apply. That's the argument. We solve the problem by limiting the ambiguity, right, or the toes. That fits the language of the Rambam. And now we go back again to that Rambam. Now I brought it in Chavzayin. Just look at the words that I highlighted, where the buyer says, "Kol mum sheyimatze b'mekach ze hapochei stamav ad kach v'kach kibalti oso." So the Rambam says, as long as you accept a certain limit, that works. And that's regarding mum. But the Rambam says, just like with ona. Right at the end of that, halacha. So the Rambam is applying this to both of those. So Rabbi Warhaftig, Itamar Warhaftig, I don't know if he's Rabbi Warhaftig, maybe Dr. Warhaftig, I'm trying to figure that out. But in Tchumen, in volume Chavbeis, the article that was sent out, Tanaim V'Takana Be'ona, he invokes this method and he offers all sorts of added justifications for why this ought to work. We see it in discussion in the Chikrei Lev. The Chikrei Lev in Chosha Mishpat Beis Chavav applied this in a case of partners who were resolving a dispute. There were two partners, they had a dispute over their business, and they went to mediators. And the mediators came up with a deal based on how this ought to work, and they got each side to be mochel their claim. However, then turned out that the mediators misunderstood one of the partners' investments in the partnership. They had the facts wrong. So the question is the mechila still binding? You were mochel, you accepted the agreement, but the agreement was on false, was made on false assumptions. So the Chikrei Lev says that in that case, the mechila was stipulated as being up to X amount. And therefore, it's a valid mechila. The mechila is valid because the partners did the stipulated the mechila as being up to a certain amount. So on that basis, he says that it's okay. We also have the Radvaz. I'm not sure exactly why I wanted to bring this. It's just going to confuse things, but I'll say it. It's a one-liner. The Radvaz, the one that you had seen in the Pesachei Tshuva, says that if one states mechila up to a particular limit, if you say I am mochel up to $1,000, right, and then it's $1,001, so now do I say, well, the $1 is within 1/6 over the $1,000, or do I say no, that means that it was onah of $1,001, and therefore it's bitul mekach? So the Radvaz's statement is that if you do, I see why I brought it in, but I didn't really need this. He says, in our case, where we're doing this limit, where we're saying mechila is valid, if you say up to X amount, it can't be X plus 1. That's the point. X plus 1 disqualifies the entire mechila. And then we go back to Bitul Mekach. Okay, fine. But that's one way around the problem. I get my consumer to say, I get my customer to sign a thing, and it says, on it, I am mochel up to a certain amount. Second approach, altering the content of mechila, is to say, if the buyer says, I am not trying to get the right price, or you say to him, you are not trying to get the right price, and he agrees. So there's no issue of lo yada. There's no issue of mechila betalos. This also is predicated on the assumption that the reason why mechila doesn't work is because you're not really mochel. So we solve the problem by saying, no, we dismiss the importance of ambiguity. What we're doing is we show that it doesn't matter that this is vague. It doesn't matter shata lo yodea mechira nachon. You don't care what the mechira nachon is. That's the argument. And the Machne Ephraim uses this idea in Tez Zayin regarding the case of nosei v'nosein ba'amuna. He said, yeah. What did I say? Oh, Chazayin, yeah. No, in Chavtet, thank you. He says, Iver the cholzen nichel epirish hagon rabbeinu chananel. Shepirish ahid in nosei v'nosein ba'amuna debistam lakhu. Velo pirish bish'az ha-megach bekama lakhu. He says, it's talking about where they bought it stam. They never specified at the time of the transaction how much the seller paid for it initially, and you don't care. In other words, in Nosei v'Nosein Ba'amuna, we had two different ways to approach what was actually going on. Rabbi Yochanan's approach is that the buyer doesn't ask the seller, how much did this cost you? He doesn't care. The Rambam has a different version of the case, but that's Rabbi Yochanan's version of the case. The Machne Ephraim says, why does that work? Because you showed you don't care. And that seems to be the explanation of the Ketzos regarding Balabayas. The Ketzos says regarding Balabayas, and I brought it in Lamed, everybody knows that the price you're paying is not the right price. Where both sides know that it's overpriced, it's like the case of where you overpay and it's an amount that nobody would make a mistake in Adas Toa. Right? It's as though they both stipulated that there's going to be Mechila. That's the argument. So the idea is that you say, I'm not trying to get the right price. I think this may be the idea of Rav Asher Weiss as well. In his article on Din Onav Bizman Hazeh, in part Gimel, he contends that even though Tanai normally should have Mefaresh, you have to specify the amount of the Onah, today it's as though we have a broad condition that Onah is not involved and the buyer has to do his due diligence. That's Derech HaMekubelis B'Meschar. That's the way people do business. So I wonder if that isn't part and parcel of the same idea. That I'm not trying to get the right price, although in his world, it's not I'm not trying to get the right price, it's I'm not trying to get the exact right price. I have a broader acceptance of being off of the right price. It's the same concept in and of itself, although it's more narrow. It's not price, what's a price? You know, I'm going to buy off the menu, and the menu doesn't say the price on it, and don't worry about it. But it is, I'm not trying to get precision here. So those are your two ways to deal with Onah and to get rid of Onah claims by changing the content of the Mechila. I don't need to be Mefaresh if I simply say either I want you to forgive Onah up to X amount or I need you to agree that you're not trying to get the right price, Adam.
I'm going up to X amount. So is the assumption after, if it turns out to be not X amount, not X amount, the Rabbaz was saying the wholesale is canceled?
The Radvaz is saying, say this again.
If you go beyond that amount, it turns out that it was more than that. Is it just that the person can be closed there, or the sale gets canceled? Like, we end up in Bizl Mekach world, where what happens?
Yeah, I think we end up in Bizl Mekach world.
So in terms of the practical usefulness of doing that as a stipulation, I mean, it's still arguably going to end up with lots of cases where there are going to be sales that.
Unless you know your game and you make your stipulation, you know, include what you're doing.
Well, I mean, which leads to the second question. Is there a limit of reasonableness? If I say, I'm willing to be a mekabel woman up to 100%.
Right. At some point, you're in asmachta territory, where people just say, well, that he clearly wasn't serious. Where your gvul is, I don't know. I mean, that's always the problem with these things. You know, at what point do we say, no one really means that? When somebody signs an agreement and he says, if I don't pay you by a certain date, I owe you $1 million. So everyone says, oh, $1 million, that's asmachta. Not so clear. What if you're dealing with a $10 million contract, right? I mean, it's only 10%. So where's your boundary? Not clear to me. Then we get to the five adjustments in the mechanism. So the first adjustment in the mechanism is have the victim be the one to state the condition. Instead of the me'ane, let it be the mid'ane. Instead of being the seller, let it be the buyer. And the concept is that mechila doesn't work because of the first explanation, because there isn't a real commitment to forgive. Right? That's the idea. So the Gemara's case of Al-Manas is where the initiative for mechila comes from the me'ane. Right? It's where the me'ane says, I don't want you to claim onah from me. So maybe that indicates less seriousness from the mit'ane, from the victim. He said, yeah. Because the guy said to him, you know, here's my disclaimer and here's my waiver and whatever. He said, yeah. But he doesn't really mean it. So if we get both, you know, it's like the software thing where you download it, right? Which you're lucky if anybody scrolls halfway down. Check. So that's what's going on here. So if we get both of them to declare the forgiveness, right? Or if in this case, we get the victim to declare it, on his own, it will work. And that takes us once again back to this poor victimized Rambam, which, you know, everybody's reading in their own way. So look at Lamed Aleph, this Rambam in Hilchos Mechira, Tesvav Vav, the words I highlighted, Oad Sheyomar Lo, meaning the Lokeach, Kol Mum Sheyimatzei B'Mekavzeh, right, Kibalti Yoso. Where the Rambam says, it's the same line that we read in order to indicate that when you state a limit, it works. Right? Instead of picking up on the fact that there's a limit in the line, pick up on the fact that the buyer is the one who's doing this, who's making the statement.
Well, what is the difference? He still doesn't know the amount.
Correct.
Maybe he thinks, I don't know, it's 1,000, but after he understood that it's, I don't know, 10,000,
right. So the reason why it works is because you show seriousness if you volunteer it. And that's really the key. I think it isn't just that he says it, but he volunteers it.
But it's in the same, in his mind, it's the same thing. That he said, I think that this is probably going to be a $1,000. It's the same thing. You're right, okay, he's bringing it because he wants the deal. But in the same thing, that he thinks that it's going to the amount is going to be 1,000. But after he understands it more, he said, yeah, if I know it, I'm apparently not going to suggest it.
Right, but the answer to that is that it's not so. The answer to that is that it's that the argument is, this is the Machane Ephraim's argument, that when you volunteer it, you wouldn't do that if you weren't serious. You would not have volunteered it if you thought that if in your head you're thinking, I'm not really mochel, even though you don't know what it is that you're being mochel, even though it could turn out to be that you thought it was only, you know, over by $10 and it's over by $100, ava bichein, when you wouldn't have said it if you didn't mean it. That's the argument.
Is the mochel prompt to look here?
Yes, that's my problem here. That's my big question here is, so do you mean that literally, that the buyer has to walk in and make this declaration?
Yeah.
What if he puts it in front of him? Yeah, I don't know. That's a hard part of this. I also don't really like this read of the Rambam, meaning that I think the Rambam is really much more about the declaration of the limit amount than he is about the fact that the buyer is the one who's initiating it. That's what it feels like in the Rambam. I think that's a more logical thing. Sorry? Right. Yeah, so he's clearly about the Akach Lakach. Yeah, I think you really do need to read it that way. But that's what he suggests.
How do you reconcile that? You know, there's that case where someone's like on a river and he's in trouble and he says, oh, if you'll just take me across, then I'll pay all this money.
Yeah.
And then he says, oh, well, I was kidding.
He
gives him like a seller.
Right.
You know, so like, how do you reconcile that with all this?
Because the ferryman didn't have the right. It's talking about where the ferryman takes advantage of his desperation. And the ferryman has a mitzvah to perform.
So that changes it.
Yeah. Okay, Yeah, that's a separate discussion.
Yeah, but according to the Rambam, it's meaning that you know exactly what's the damage.
Right, well, that's the thing. That's why this supports the idea that the emphasis is really the ad kach v'kach and not the lokeach being the one to say it. The fact that he had the lokeach, the one to say it, I think is just because it's unreasonable to expect a case in which the mocher says, ad kach v'kach. If somebody was going to sell me an item, and he said to me, you know, this may be onah of up to $100, I would go somewhere else. It's one thing to say to me, I don't know if there's onah or not, so fine. Once you tell me it's up to $100, I start to wonder.
Yeah. Well, I want to cover myself.
Yeah. So the emphasis, I think,
it may not be cubic circumference.
Right. Okay. The second of the five changes to the mechanism is not the same as the previous one. It's a different idea, and that is to have both sides do the mechila for each other. Meaning, the theory is mechila doesn't work, like we said in the first argument, because there isn't a real commitment to forgive. So we'll apply that and say the victim isn't mochel because he has no incentive to do so. If by being mochel he gains mechila for his own onah from the other side, then he will forgive his own claim. You follow? In other words, it's not the same idea as the previous one. We want the buyer to initiate. The point is that if the buyer is being mochel in order to get the seller to be mochel, then he will do it seriously because he feels like he's gaining something. Chedusha Rabbeinu Meir Simcha says this on an Aleph Amid Aleph. I thought it was brilliant. He sees a similar idea in Tosfos Ayin Dalet Amid Aleph, the Maschil Hacha, regarding a smachta of Masachik Bekuvia, which I brought you on the sheet, but in the interest of time, I'm going to say it outside, but you can see it in Source Lamed Beis. Rabbeinu Tam is bothered in this discussion in Tosfos because the Gemara Bav Mitzia in Gimel Lamed Beis Ayin Dalet Amid Aleph indicates that if you are less certain that you control your own success, if you think it's more up to chance, then you're also less likely to make a kinyan seriously. Right? The less control you have of the situation, the less likely you are to be meshabed yourself. However, Rabbeinu Tam asks, then how is it that a gambler can be considered serious enough to make a kinyan? The Gemara there is not talking about gambling. The Gemara there is talking about the person who rents a field. And he says, and if I don't work the field, then I'll give you whatever it is, right? I'm over below avid. And it says, since it's in his control, he's more likely to actually make this agreement seriously. Well, then how does a gambler ever make a kinyan? So Rabbeinu Tam's answer is, because he wants the other side in the gamble to make a kinyan. That's Rabbeinu Tam's answer.
And he knows that that's required.
So. And he knows that that's required, precisely. So because he wants the other guy to do it, therefore he will agree to it also. So Rabbeinu Meir Simcha says, that's going to work to avoid onah. We'll get the buyer to make a legitimate mechila by telling him, and the seller will agree to make a mechila as well. He also sees this in the Shach regarding Noseh V'Nosein Ve'emunah. In the case of Noseh V'Nosein Ve'emunah, the Shach indicates that it isn't only about the buyer buying it on faith, but the seller is selling it on faith. And the seller also gives up his ability to claim onah. Not like the Machne Ephraim's discussion about Noseh V'Nosein Ve'emunah, different approach. Not about not trying to get the right price on the part of the buyer. But rather, that each side, in Noseh V'Nosein Ve'emunah, each side says, I suspend my claim of onah. And because each side says, I suspend my claim of onah, they do it seriously because they know what they're getting in exchange. You follow? That's the argument. You were going to say?
To me, it sounds odd, you know, yeah, that both of them are providing mechila here.
Why is that odd?
Because one side is, you know, because the price is at a certain level. It's unlikely that the seller is being cheated if the price is here on the other side.
Well, the question, right, the question is, really, in our world, we usually think of it as the seller cheating the buyer. It's unusual to think of the buyer getting one over on the seller. So in that sense, maybe he doesn't think it's worthwhile for him. I hear. The third of the mechanical changes is put the mechila in writing. And the concept is, mechila, again, doesn't work because there's no real commitment to forgive. And the application of it is to say, well, he wouldn't put it in writing unless he was serious about forgiving it. The Pamanei Zahav quotes this from someone who, it looked like he was referring to the Sechemed, but I can't find it in the Sechemed. And maybe I misread the reference, because the text in the Pamanei Zahav itself is not so simple. But what he says is that Mechila Betaus in writing is valid Mechila. And the Pamanei Zahav quotes it, and he says, I don't know what you're talking about. Didn't you read the Rashba? Right? The Rashba, this big Rashba that we talked about, the case of the lender of funds, who gave the money to the other guy and it wasn't in writing, and that whole discussion, right? In which he said, even if this, what happened is, let me give the full story now, because I didn't give the full story before. He gave him the money to lend out, right? Then the guy comes back to him and says, I don't know what you're talking about. And he has no evidence for it. He did the mechila. He said, okay, fine, I'll mocha so I get him on it. Mocha mechila, shemayim mechila, sabrios, and everything. And then proof turns up to demonstrate the loan. Now witnesses show up. I didn't mean to be mochel. I wasn't serious about my mechila. So in that discussion, the Rashba says, even if he writes, I am mochel without any error or compulsion, it is nothing unless he writes, I know I could claim more. But the point is, the fact that he wrote it didn't matter. You follow? The Rashba cares about what you wrote. He doesn't care about the fact that you wrote. Writing doesn't make any difference.
So the fact that it's documented, the shtar, yeah. Like we have this as a big issue in law.
Yeah.
I'm not a lawyer.
That documentation is not going out.
Documentation is irrelevant. It's the content. The
correct.
The questions are verbally and orally.
Correct.
And it's all the same.
And the Parmenizov quotes another sefer called something Yehuda, Beit Chaim Yehuda, perhaps, don't know. It's, again, one of these that's very hard to read there. And he quotes the Yad Malachi, all saying that when you write, you put it in, you mean it seriously. But then he says, but what are you going to do with the Rashba? So he says the Yad Malachi just didn't know about it. And so he relied on the chilub because he didn't know an opponent. He didn't know that somebody disagreed. If he would have known, the Rashba disagreed. Absolutely not. Now, I would add myself that we see many cases in which conditions are rejected, and the fact that they are in writing doesn't make any difference. So the Ma'arit is one example of it. The Ma'arit is in opposition to this idea. He didn't accept a document stipulating rights for lenders if there was any doubt. Even though it's a written document,
there was any doubt.
I'm jumping here because I don't want to. Yeah. I want to be able to finish this week. I don't want to take it into next week's year's not reloaded enough as it is. But the Ma'arit rejects a written document. The Chikrei Lev that we saw above, the case of the two partners where they were mochel to accept this mediator's agreement, that was all in writing. He didn't care about the fact that it was in writing. His only question in the discussion was it up to a certain limit? But he didn't care about the fact that it was in writing.
It's
in writing doesn't really help you.
Yeah, it's interesting. In law, in our country, with the exception of real estate, theoretically, verbal contracts are as binding as written. The problem is proving it.
Yeah. Well, you have witnesses.
But theoretically, they are as considered as binding.
Interesting. Okay. Okay. The fourth mechanical difference is have the mochel take a shvua that he's mochel. Same concept as the in writing one, right? The reason why mechila doesn't work is because there isn't a commitment to forgive. The application is the victim wouldn't swear unless he was serious about forgiving it. That's what we want to say. The Machane Ephraim in Yudalid is the one who asks the question of whether this will actually work. You know, no, Yudalid. He argues that mefarish works because then he forgives properly. That's what makes mefarish work. And he says that's also why mechila happens with the balabayas and with no seven no seven be'amuna. He knows there is ona and he knows that he can't claim it, right? Like we said before, the circular argument. And he says the same thing is true if there's a shavua. It shows he really is mochel. However, the Chiddush Rabbeinu Meir Simcha on Nun Aleph Amud Aleph says absolutely not. He says that's not the way to explain Bala Bais. That's not the way to explain Mefarish. And he says shavua does not change a thing. But that's the argument. The last of the mechanical differences is an overarching one. And that is, let's make a communal takana that says everyone is mochel. And the concept, I think, applies to all three of the arguments against mechila working. Meaning, you say the mochel isn't serious, but now it will be serious because he knows he can't claim it. It's like that Machane Ephraim. Now he knows the community has made a rule. I can't claim Ona, therefore he will be mochel.
It's like a din of the mochuzik.
Yeah, exactly.
It's overriding.
The second argument is mechila betaus doesn't work. But now it isn't toast because he's not trying to get the right price because he's been told trying to get the right price is useless. And as far as the Torah disqualifying mechila, that's only in the case of, quote, normal commerce. We've now left the realm of normal commerce in which each side wants to get the best deal because you've just forgiven your right to try to get the best deal. That would be the argument behind this. The history of it goes back to the Chavos Yair in 17th century Germany. The case was, you had a group of textile merchants who apparently also learned together in a chabura. and they asked their Rebbe to help them out. They wanted to make a rule because it was costing them too much money to go to him every time they needed a psak in a dispute that they had between them, and it was causing all sorts of fights. And they're worried about making mistakes, and they said, "Look, let's just make a rule: everybody forgives." And they asked the Rebbe to paskin on this, and the Rebbe first of all says that I can't paskin on this because I have a conflict of interest. I get money every time you have a dispute. So he has to go to somebody else. I brought it for you in Lamed Zayin. He says, I think this is a terrible idea because what you're doing is justifying Gezel, right? By saying, well, no one will claim it from the other. But at the end of the day, what you're doing is wrong. He says it's called Hamas. He says you're not allowed to do that. But he said you didn't ask me for Musar. You asked me for Din Umishpat. So yeah, and then right, he says Gam LeInyan Torah Eino Masbik Klal V'Lo Yinoku B'Tikun Kaza Filu B'Dinei Adam. I'm reading the end of the part that I excerpted in Lamed Zayin. Yeah, he's really unhappy with this idea. The second time that comes up is in the Knesset Yechezkel in 18th century Germany. The second time I've seen it, could be there are others. This Knesset Yechezkel in the original is the hard to read Knesset Yechezkel. It's page 137 of the PDF. Fortunately, it also shows up in the Pesachei Tshuva Resh Chav Zayin Yud Aleph, which is what I brought you here as a cut and pasteable text in Source Lamed Ches, in which the gem merchants in a city were having trouble with claims of Onah, and again they made this takana. But there were quirks in that case. The quirks are, number one, it was only for gems, which the Knesset Yechezkel says is different because Rabbi Yehuda and Ches Amud Beis says gems are unique. There may not be a law of Onah because the buyer wants it to match up with the other gems and with the setting. Second is that the takana there was only for buyers, not for sellers. It was specifically on the buyer side. It wasn't eliminating Onah entirely. It was for the buyers to be mochel. And third, they placed
this
a cap.
Is like the mochel will be committed.
Yes. Yeah. And then the third is that they placed a cap of 50% on the mechila. So Rabbi Warhaftig, Dr. Warhaftig, likes the idea. He says this is great. Number one, it will enable markets to progress. And because you can do business now and not worry people are going to undermine me. And number two, it's going to keep people from sinning. Especially if you say there's an Isser of Onah, even at less than a sixth, we just can't claim it in Beis Din, now they won't be guilty anymore, against the idea that the Chavos Yoreh records from the Rebbe of the textile merchants who was not happy with this. However, he says there are concerns, right? The concern is you're permitting bad behavior, and the Knesset Yechezkel's point that the gems case is really unique. So what Dr. Warhaftig comes up with as his set of recommendations to make this work is the following. He says, number one, it should not be a sweeping enactment. Let it be a disclaimer that you execute in every sale. In every sale, have them sign a piece of paper with this disclaimer on it. And he argues that that's what the Sefer HaChinuch wants you to do. I brought it to you as the last source. And Lamites, HaRotzeli Natzla Mikoch Shash Inyanim Elu Shekasavnu, if you want to get out of all of these concerns, tell the Lokeach that which I'm selling you, I know there is Onah up to a certain limit. He says that's exactly what we're going to do. In every interaction, we're going to do this. Further, he says, you need both sides to stipulate it, because the seller could be a victim too, and that will satisfy our desire then to have two-sided mechila. You want to have each side state the mechila independently, and that will help us satisfy the desire to have the victim volunteer it on his own, and not just agree to the other side's proposal. And you need to stipulate that this doesn't cover intentional onah, because that's something one would never be mochel. You need to provide a cap on the acceptable percentage. He offers 25% as an acceptable percentage. And he said it would be worthwhile to have each of them stipulate we're accepting the view of those who accept such tonight. Kimli, some version of Kimli. We are going with those who accept that. So what you end up with is, just to sum up this last bit, the last half hour or so, that understanding what the mechila issues are, meaning Ramban's argument, Gzeras HaKasuv, meaning you aren't mochel because you aren't serious about it, meaning mechila b'tazah doesn't work, leads me to the following potential fixes. two fixes in terms of the direct content of the mechila by saying either that you do it up to a particular limit, or you say I am not trying to get the right price at all, or mechila in mechanism. Have the victim be the one to volunteer the condition. Have both sides do mechila for each other so each one is gaining something. Put the mechila in writing. Have him take an oath that he is mochel, or make a communal takana. Yeah, Adam.
Isn't there also some sugya assume that even once you made the mechila, it's only at the level of mamon in terms of isure, and isur was still violated?
That's certainly what the Chavos Yair seems to think. Right?
So, I mean, more than just the.
Because us are popular.
Those there are, I don't know if there's other Rishonim also, seem to assume that our sugya never allowed this to happen at a moral level, only at technical mamon level.
Right. Right. I think you're right. I understand why you would say Dr. Warhaftig thinks that...
He is Rabbi Doctor.
He is Rabbi Doctor?
He is a shul. He is Rabbi Knesset.
Okay.
Thank you, Wikipedia.
Okay. Because his page at the university says nothing about Rabbi or Smicha and his education.
Rav and a Zion.
That's good to know.
And a Zion.
And a Zion.
And a Zion.
Okay.
So we're just like ignoring that the Jesus.
Well, he is.
Is Yaakov or Avram or
Itamar?
Itamar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that's what he's doing.
The Gansmishbach.
All right. Shkayach.